before Transfiguration Sunday, all of a sudden we find ourselves at the end of Epiphany, on the threshold of Lent, and puts us kind of in one jump all the way into a whole new section of the year. Transfiguration clearly carries, and in some ways forms the capstone of Epiphany, because it is in the Transfiguration where our Lord in His glory is manifested specifically to the three that were there with Him. At the same time, He formed the link between the Epiphany and Lent by telling them, when you go down off the mountain, don't tell anyone what you've seen, because you don't have it in context yet until the Son of Man has been died and risen again. The Old Testament lesson for the day is a very short one and a very straightforward one. Hebrew is very, very simple. It won't take us long to run through it at all. Exodus chapter 24. The lectionary selects verse 12 and then verses 15 through 18, which is to say it skips over verses 13 and 14. And there may be a couple of reasons for that. You don't know, you hate to read people's minds, but one of the reasons is that in 12 and 15 to 18 are primarily something that happens between Yahweh and Moses, whereas 13 and 14 involve the elders and involve also the second leader of Israel, namely Joshua. He's not mentioned in 12 or 15 to 18. So I would imagine, just for the sake of a cleaner emphasis or a clearer focus, they have decided to jump from 12, use 12 basically as the introduction, and then 15 to 18 as the substance of what links up with Transfiguration. So, to verse 12. Vayomer Adonai el Moshe. Straightforward. And the Lord said to Moses, Ale Eli Hahara. Allah, this is the imperative, Allah, to go up, come up, come up to me. Ordinarily it's go up, but when the to me, the directional preposition makes the go a come. Come up to me, to the mountain. The directional word on har. Says to the mountain. Next phrase is interesting. Wehye sham. Sham here, haya, the verb to be. Most translations would translate that stay here or dwell here or something like that. The Hebrew, however, is simply and be here. And you know, you'd think that ordinarily maybe the word yashav, to dwell, to stay, to linger, would be the clearer choice here. And you don't know why that word is there, to be here, whether that is to signal some kind of duration or a waiting for Yahweh. Is this maybe an echo of Yahweh's own name that was revealed not too many chapters before? I am who I am, and now you am here. Be here. Don't know. But it is an interesting occurrence. Wa'etana laka et luchok ha'evin. And this is an interesting bit of grammar, grammatical construction here too. And Nathan give, the imperfect, first person singular, I will give, except that when you have the ah ending there, it makes it kind of a jussive or a cohortative sense rather than a simple imperfect or a future sense. And let me give to you. Or maybe that, together with the wah consecutive, should lead us to translate something like, you come up to the mountain and be here so that I can give to you the stone tablets. Wahatorah, Wahamitzvah, Esher Kathavti, Lahorotham. Also, when you press the words, a little bit of an interesting construction as well. What he was going to give, what Yahweh is going to give Moses on the mountain is not, according to this anyhow, not only the stone tablets, but also HaTorah. Don't know how we translate that. If we translate it Torah, you know, in the sense of a book, a body of something or other written down, or whether it has the more generic sense, which is reflected in the last word of the verse, where it's, the root occurs in a verbal form, to teach or to instruct, whether it's just the generic sense of the teaching, the instruction. And HaMitzvah, the commandment, singular. And that's interesting. Ordinarily, when the ten are talked about, the ten words or the ten commandments, it would be in the plural. Here it is singular. You come up to the mountain and be there so that I can give to you the stone tablets, the Torah, and the commandment, which I have written in order to instruct them. And here the basic meaning of Torah is very clear. And I would guess that what's up above is... reflecting the more generic sense, simply because the verb kind of helps define that here. So you stay up there, you come up on the mountain with me here, and before you go down, I'm going to give you the stone tablets. I'm going to at the same time give you the explanation or the instruction about those the tablets and the command itself. If we put it into our Lutheran dogmatic categories, we got here, it seems to me, pretty clearly, both law and gospel. The mitzvah, clearly law. The teaching, the instruction, the interpretation, the background, the context, clearly incorporates gospel as well. They're both involved in what has happened in the Exodus, which goes just before this, and in the faith of the people of Israel. All right, on down to 15 then. Vaya'al Moshe el Hahar. And Allah to go up, we saw that before, in response to God's command, go up, he went up. And Moses went up. Look at that's footnoted there. Look down at the footnote under verse 15. You have an interesting word that pops out there, namely the word Kai Jesus, Moses and Jesus. What's the Jesus doing there? Joshua, right? But boy, it really jumps out at you that it would be translated Jesus. Whether this is because in verses 13 and 14 Joshua makes an appearance, and for consistency, whatever other translations or versions kind of added that in is likely what has happened. It just kind of you do a double take on that. He went up to the mountain. The verb is clearly in a singular, so if you add Jesus in there, or Joshua, you got to do something to the verb too, and nothing's been done with that. Anyhow, Moses went up to the mountain, Vayikas ha'anan eth hahar, and the cloud, not a cloud, the cloud, and that I guess will be specified down below, the cloud covered the mountain. Why is kon kavod Adonai al Har Sinai, and the glory of Yahweh came to dwell upon Mount Sinai. Heavy word there, heavy phrase. Why yakasehu ha'anan sheshet yamim, kasa, the same verb to cover. And it, that is, the cloud, covered it, the mountain, 6 days. We have 6 days here. We got the seventh coming down below. Is that an echo of the creation? Or that aspect of God's revelation or his deeds or whatever? It's one of those questions that just lingers. Why yikra el Moshe? Bayom ha-shvi'i mitoch ha'anan. And he called. The he is not specified here, and if you look at the footnote, you'll see that that some of the versions felt it should be specified, and so the word Yahweh appears there. And he called to Moses on the seventh, on the day that is the seventh one, from the midst of the cloud. Umar e, kavod Adonai k'esh okeleth, berosh hahar. And this is a noun form of the verb ra'ah, to see, to appear. The appearance of the glory of Yahweh as a fire, O Keleth, eating, devouring, consuming, as a consuming fire, the glory of the Lord appeared on the top of the mountain. La'ene b'nei Yisrael, in the eyes of the children of Israel, as they looked at it, it looked for all the world like the mountain was on fire. Vayavo Moshe b'thok ha'anan, and Moses walked into the middle of the cloud. That's a picturesque image that you have there, walking into this frightening, you know, burning thing that's there. He walked into the middle of it. Vayal el hahar, and went and ascended the mountain, went up to the mountain. Vayehi Moshe Bahar Arba'im Yom Arba'im Laila. And Moses was on the mountain 40 days and 40 nights. Very simple, forward, straightforward Hebrew. Any questions about the Hebrew at all, or anything else? Yeah. Likely. Right. Yeah, and whether, you know, we're talking foothills and mountains, real hills, or, you know, you don't know what the topography was. Certainly there was an ascent. At the same time, there was an ongoing ascent beyond which Moses was no longer visible. And what the children of Israel saw was the cloud, and then up on top of the cloud was that like fire, like a consuming, terrifying fire. And in whether, you know, scholars like to play with the question of whether this was something like, either it was or something like a volcanic something or other, or... I don't know that the picture is given necessarily that it's smoke from the fire. I think the smoke stands, or the cloud has its own identity, and the cloud is used often in the Old Testament to symbolize the presence of God, the cloud in the temple, in the Holy of Holies, and the cloud being sucked out of the temple when Yahweh leaves the temple in Ezekiel. The fire, I think, is kind of icing on the cake. I think the important thing is not the fire, it's the cloud. If they're... No, all it says is like a fire. What it is that their eyeballs were seeing, you don't know. Yeah. You have the sense that they were able to see, that they tracked him up until they couldn't see him anymore. This comes before the golden calf. That's chapter 32. But he was there 40 days, 40 nights. That's a long time. You're sitting out there in a desert, man. You don't have a decent McDonald's to eat. You don't have nothing. And your leader's gone. This... The section we have here does not make mention of Joshua except in verse 13. You'll see Joshua mentioned, but that is in terms of commanding the elders to stay. So there's silence about Joshua here. That's right, yeah. And Aaron was too, as far as that goes. And he was the person that they looked to in Moses' absence. Right. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, the sense would continue along there, and the subsequent grammar kind of demands that. The only correction that's made here in terms of the footnote is to take away the while consecutive that's there, and then you kind of have a comma that comes there. I'll give you the stone tablets, namely, yeah, something like that, right. So even in the versions, you have an attempt to make sense of grammar that seems a little strained. All right, what to preach on this text? What hits your eye as something really, really preachable or unique? All right, won't wait too long, because Dr. Gibbs has to come at it too. A couple of thoughts, though. Very clearly, this pericope is describing here a point of meeting between God and man, right? And the direction is the coming of God to the mountain. The major direction that's here is the coming down and the dwelling, shakan, the dwelling of God on the mountain. The same word that's used in John 1 that talks about the word dwelt among us, the word that the Jewish commentators made into a noun and used as the way of talking about God or the presence of God, the Shekinah of God, the dwelling of God on the mountain in order to give his Torah, his instruction, his interpretation of what has gone on in the Exodus, and his will for his people. And the two are always tied together. You do not ever have the law without the gospel, or the gospel that doesn't lead to the proper expression of the law in the life of people. At the same time, as God comes down, he calls Moses up. And there is that direction, this, the going to meet God that is crucial in this text as well. In the same way in the Transfiguration Gospel, you have the sense that there is kind of a midpoint there, a sense by Peter certainly that being up on the mountain was something a little bit different from normal everyday life, and he was happy to build a booth or two or three up there, you know, and kind of hang on to that experience. But that is not where life goes on. It didn't for the Old Testament, and Moses got down off the mountain, and darn if he didn't find the golden calf. And Peter and the disciples come down off the mountain, and darn if they didn't find their Lord crucified. The claim of evil in the world is still strong, and that exactly, however, is the reason for the revelation and presence and manifestation of God in the first place. All right, unless there are questions, I think we'll move toward the new.